Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I want to start today's program by talking a little bit about rivalries, because I've noticed something that seems to be occurring with a couple of the SEC rivalries. One may be getting bigger, more intense than it's been before. One may be, at least in the future, immediate future, not quite as intense as it once was. And I think that leads us to an interesting question about the current state of some of Georgia's rivalries. Let me explain it this way. So I've noticed recently on Twitter that Mike Leach, the current Mississippi State coach, and Lane Kiffin, the current Ole Miss coach, kind of have a little bit of a Twitter relationship. You know, Leach tweets these funny things the other day. Kiffin essentially retweeted him in kind of a laughing tone. And if you follow the SEC closely, I don't have to tell you how different that is than the typical relationship that Ole Miss and Mississippi State have had with each other in recent years. I joked about this on my video version of Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharpa earlier today. I've given up on trying to be a perfect person. One of the things that makes me imperfect is that I love all the tacky aspects of the Egg Bowl, the Ole Miss-Mississippi State rivalry, the way those two programs have been at each other's throats. I just find that to be incredibly entertaining. And this is not just fan versus fan. It has been institutional rivalries. The athletic directors have been involved. The coaches have been involved. It's just kind of an ugly, beautiful spectacle when it comes to this Thanksgiving night game. And you have to ask the question of, well, if Leach and Kiffin are friends, and I've been led to believe by some people whom I know that their relationship might be a little closer than even some people actually even realize. If that's true and these guys are kind of friendly with each other, does that make the Egg Bowl rivalry a little less intense than it used to be? Now, for fans, it won't change things, but in terms of the way that the institutions themselves have kind of gone back and forth with each other, is that about to be a little bit different? I think that's a fair question to ask. However, while that's going on, the friendship between Kiffin and Leach may be somewhat diminishing the Egg Bowl. I think you see another SEC rivalry that's really getting more intense. And this is kind of a cool thing to see, because there are a lot of newish teams in the SEC. I mean, really, you know, it's not that long ago that Missouri and Texas A&M were added into this conference. And anytime you bring in a new program to a conference, you know, I think there's this thing of, well, who are the rivalries going to be? Who are they going to play each and every year across the division? Who are they going to play near the end of the season? That's a time of year which we typically think of rivalry games occurring. And some of this ends up feeling a little bit made for TV. I'm a pro wrestling fan, and I think we know when a rivalry has been put together in the wrestling ring of two guys that don't really have much of a backstory, two guys that don't really have much of a what would seem to be, on the basis of pro wrestling storylines, a legitimate beef with each other. They're just kind of forced in there, and this is kind of manufactured, contrived, made for TV. And sometimes college football has its own version of that. These two teams, we're told, now are rivals, but they don't have much of a backstory. For instance, you know, Missouri and Arkansas, you know, they share a border with the Ozark Mountains. Supposedly that's supposed to make them rivals. They play near the end of the season. But does anybody really feel like Arkansas and Missouri are rivals? Does anybody care about those two teams playing each other? They, in recent years, have played on that Friday after Thanksgiving, but no one notices. No one cares. No one really views it as a rivalry. And I think for a while there was another version of that, like, say, Texas A&M and LSU. Geographically, they aren't that far apart, and so therefore it kind of made some sense, since LSU did not already have an end-of-season rivalry game that it always played. Well, let's just put LSU and Texas A&M at the end of the season. We'll kind of call that a rivalry. But for a long time, that's all it really was. You called it a rivalry, but it didn't necessarily have the feeling of that. There wasn't really a legitimate beef between these two programs. However, in recent years, that's changed. You've had athletic directors going from one spot to the other. You had the coach that LSU once made an overture towards, Jimbo Fisher, now coaching at Texas A&M. You've had other staff members moving from place to place. You had the weird 74-72 game a couple of years ago where there was some fisticuffs and some accusations being thrown around. That kind of, you know, throws a log on this fire. There were lawsuits involved between entities associated with these programs. And so all of a sudden now, Texas A&M LSU actually has the feeling of kind of being a real legitimate rivalry. And there's an example of that even this week. And this is going to eventually be about UGA. So stay with me just for a moment. There was an example of that this week, because LSU coach Ed Orgeron has actually been fairly public during the coronavirus outbreak. He's done some PSAs and some things like that. He even did a local TV interview in Louisiana this week. And in the midst of kind of talking about why you should wash your hands and not touch your face and stay indoors and all these things, the reporter also brought up – it's just kind of funny that this comes up in the midst of the coronavirus. The reporter also kind of brought up Texas A&M and the fact that A&M was selling – I think it's cups, I think he says – was selling cups with the 74-72 score from a couple of years ago in Kyle Field in Kyle Field this past year. And it leads to a pretty funny comment from LSU coach Ed Orgeron. So here in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak, you've got a little rivalry jabbing back and forth between the Aggies and the Tigers. We're here for that. In fact, here's what Ed Orgeron told a local Louisiana TV station.
Texas A&M made cups with the score of the LSU game on them and were selling concessions.
Yeah, I'm sure they did all that they could. I hope they enjoyed it because they – I hope they put the score last year's game. They didn't sell many cups on that one.
50-7 may not sell as well.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
First of all, I've really grown to like Orgeron. I think he's really entertaining. I think the fact that he's, you know, he's like a regular guy. You know, he's kind of bothered by the A&M gesture there, but he's not that bothered by it. He just kind of returns the fire and moves on. I mean, I think we need guys like that in the SEC. I like what Orgeron brings to the table. That's a relatively new opinion for me. At one point in time, I thought Orgeron was probably a little bit of a clown. Now I think of him as anything but that. So good for Ed Orgeron kind of having some fun at A&M's expense there. But, you know, in light of what I'm saying here, that there could be an example of one rival in the SEC, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, that because the two coaches are friends, maybe that's about to be a little less intense for the next couple of years. A&M LSU seems to be on the opposite trajectory. That rivalry would seem to be getting more intense, especially if Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies are as good as on paper it seems like they have a chance to be this year. That might be throwing another log on the fire of that rivalry, which kind of brings us to Georgia here for a moment, because I think that the question that you ask yourself is, if we see an ebb and flow of rivalries within the SEC that don't involve the Dogs, could we also see a ebb and flow of rivalries that do involve UGA? And as a way of setting this up, let me also say this about Georgia and its rivals at the moment. There's obviously a lot from a resume standpoint that Georgia's got to improve. It's got to get back to the College Football Playoff. It needs to win the SEC again. It needs to bring home that coveted national championship. We understand all of that. But there's one area in which Georgia is passing the test with flying colors right now. There's one area in which Georgia is getting the job done. Georgia's handling business against its rivals. We talk Gator Hater Updater on the show each and every day. Georgia's got a run of dominance against Auburn. Georgia Tech, the in-state rival, is not a factor at all in comparison to UGA. This is a very good run, a bull market, if you will, for Georgia when it comes to its rivals. But how about the relationship that Georgia has with those rivalries? And how about the way that the 2020 schedule is about to be different this year? Does that have the potential of changing the way that Georgia feels about its rivals just a bit? For instance, the Auburn game, which has long been played in November, is about to be moved up to October. And in its place in November is now going to be Tennessee. Is there a chance that over the course of the long haul, playing the Auburn game a little earlier, playing the Tennessee game a little later, means that Georgia-Auburn in the future feels a little less like the intense rivalry that it feels like today, and that Georgia-Tennessee, by virtue of when it's going to be played, feels a little more like an intense rivalry because it's happening near the end of the season? Now, I don't want to say I'm a historian. That's not true. I am a lover of history. That's a better way to say it. And I certainly am a great appreciator of UGA's history. And I understand the role in which the Deep South's oldest rivalry has kind of fit into that Georgia tradition of the past. But admittedly, now with a new date on the calendar, don't we have to be at least a little bit open that our kids, the next generation of Georgia fan, may have a little bit different feeling about this rivalry as the time passes? And you may say, well, no, BA, that's not going to happen. That's impossible. Let me remind you, though, of some of the things that Kirby Smart has said about this in the past. In acknowledging how many rivalries that Georgia has, he has kind of put a little bit of extra emphasis on games played within the division. That's what Tennessee is. At the expense of teams outside the division, Georgia Tech is not even in the conference, and Auburn, who's in the SEC West. Let me give you an example of that going back a couple of years ago. Here's Kirby Smart on the subject of rivalries.
We said before, there's five, I think, states contiguous with Georgia, so they're all huge rivalries. And to say that one's more important than the other, I think that's unfair. I think when you say SEC East, you've got to rank those opponents first, because in order to advance, you've got to beat those teams. So those would be all 1As. You know, then you cross over to the West, and it makes it a little different.
So you hear Kirby Smart say there that my 1As are the SEC East opponents, teams like Florida, and I would assume he was meaning also teams like Tennessee because of the importance of winning the division to sort of set yourself up for the college football playoff. Now, the caveat to all of this is when it comes to rivalry talk, Smart says one thing and kind of feels another. He downplays rivalries before the game and then celebrates like mad after they're over with. That's going to become part of this process. We understand that. But there is to a degree to which we should probably take him at his word that division games will have extra importance moving forward. And there's some belief that the reason why the Georgia-Tennessee game has been rescheduled is to kind of make the SEC East feel important near the end of the season, much the same way the SEC West gets to feel that way with the Iron Bowl and things like that. Now, understand what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that Georgia-Auburn is not a rivalry anymore. Obviously, for a lot of the audience that listens to me each and every day, this is as intense a game as college football can provide. And as much as I kind of ring the bell for the Gator-Hater rivalry and the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, there are plenty of people who listen to me that have always said, B.A., I love you, but Auburn's the rivalry that matters the most to me. And those people aren't going to change their minds because the game's played in October. But, you know, the story of college football is told over the course of decades, not just over the course of a couple of years. And if this change remains permanent, you know, I think there's a chance that our feeling about it does become a little different across that time. I guess the one thing that makes this different, though, is that for the foreseeable future, Auburn is going to continue to be a tough game. It's going to continue to be a good team. And geographically, because Auburn is as close to Georgia as it is, these two programs are going to continue to fight over the same recruits in a lot of years. And that entire aspect, the talent that Auburn has in the field, the tug of war for that talent during the recruiting season, that is going to have an impact on how the game is viewed, which will probably help it maintain its status as a Georgia rivalry. With that in mind, let me let you hear Kirby Smart before the 2018 Georgia-Auburn game, kind of summing up why that game will kind of always get circled on the calendar no matter when it's played. Here's Kirby from 2018.
It's a rivalry game. I mean, it's, you know, so many of our kids recruited by them and so many of vice versa. It's just, it's always a rivalry game. And I think that a big part of that is being at your best when your best is needed. And that's the challenge for our guys. We're playing at home at night in our stadium, which I think is really important to our fans, important to our players, to protect our home turf. And we want to put our best effort forward and certainly going to have to with the challenge they present because they've got a lot of good football players.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm trying to say here is I don't expect Georgia-Auburn to stop being a rivalry. I just expect Georgia-Tennessee to start feeling a little bit more like a rivalry and maybe take some of the juice that the Deep South's oldest rivalry used to have in the month of November, which is kind of thought of as the most important month in the college football season. So ultimately, this isn't subtracting from Georgia-Auburn as much as it is adding to Georgia-Tennessee. In a roundabout way, I think that's kind of a good thing. I mean, I think that college football fans have an obligation to celebrate their rivalry wins, and it's fun when you do have a lot of rivalries like Georgia has. As Kirby Smart says, big state with a lot of big programs at the border, a lot of chances to celebrate those rivalry games. And Georgia fans would do well to remember that as those games are played this upcoming season. And beating Tennessee in November with Jeremy Pruitt trying to be a thorn on the dog's side with a former Georgia player now lining up and wearing a Tennessee uniform, all of a sudden that's kind of worth paying attention to. And all of a sudden Georgia-Tennessee does feel a little bit more like a bigger rivalry, which for college football and the SEC's sake may not be a bad thing. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. And I know many of you are dealing with a very tough situation right now. You may find yourself on the heels of divorce, and obviously the kind of weird time for our society and the coronavirus and all that kind of stuff probably makes the time even more stressful for you. Meriwether and Tharp understands all of that, and they want to be an advocate on your side during this time. They're your source for Georgia divorce. You may find yourself a little bit more free time than you're used to, not able to get out and do some things. It's a great chance to check out some of the free resources available from Meriwether and Tharp, whether it be podcasts or blog posts or things along those lines that can help you inform yourself about the divorce process. They also offer some free resources about how you can save your relationship. And if you can save yours, you should. But if you can't, and if too much has happened, if too much time has passed, well, Meriwether and Tharp is an advocate on your side. They're your source for Georgia divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Coming up a little bit later on, ESPN's done a fun thing with kind of a Field of 64 imaginary tournament for 2020 college football teams, and Georgia has done pretty well in that. I'll tell you more about that coming up. But for now, I had a chance to catch up with Mike Griffith. We talked about a number of subjects, including how Georgia is going to handle this pause to the football calendar during the time of protection against the coronavirus outbreak. We'll do that a lot more with Mike Griffith, and it's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether & Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether & Tharp, good to get a chance to talk to Mike Griffith, even if it's a little bit unusual times around the Georgia football program and really around our world. Mike, you live in Athens. I live here in suburban Atlanta. How are things there in the classic city? What have you noticed, I guess, since all of this has gone down?
Well, I mean, as you might imagine, Brent, it's, you know, campus is it's ghost town. The only thing going there is that construction on that football building. I mean, that's the only real movement that you see on campus. And, you know, downtown Athens certainly isn't as vibrant. You know, surrounding areas come just, you know, much slower. I mean, certainly not the traffic flow that we're used to. It is, as you would imagine, an air of sadness to it all. It just doesn't seem – it's hard to wrap our brain around not seeing the Georgia campus thriving. You don't see the students out, the buses running, you know, kids going from class to class, the football – the whistle's blowing. I mean, that's what's supposed to be happening right now, and it certainly does seem surreal.
One of the things I talk about a lot is – and you live in Athens, so you understand this probably better – but the average consumer of Dog Nation content, someone who comes to DogNation.com or someone who listens to our program, that person is, like, on average, a football fan 100 times more than he or she is a fan of other sports. Just our numbers kind of bear that out. However, when you live in Athens, you meet sort of a different version of a UGA fan. You know, the folks who live in Athens seemingly love the other sports. You know, spring around the campus, certainly last year, last couple of years, I mean, it's a really vibrant time to be around UGA. The baseball team being really good, it's certainly something that helps that. Softball's doing well. You know, the end of the winter sports season also. You know, I think for the person that doesn't spend a lot of time in Athens, who kind of only thinks of UGA as a football team, I think it can be easy to gloss over, just I used the word sad a moment ago. I think it's easy to gloss over how sad this can be for the people in Athens who are filling up Foley Field or, you know, enjoying some of the other sports. To have that kind of taken away from you, it's obviously – a surreal thing that I don't think that any of us have dealt with in our lifetimes. And, you know, just for a UGA community that was looking so much forward to the spring sports season, I mean, it's just a real punch in the stomach, is it not?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think you put that well. I mean, there are so many different opportunities, whether it's baseball or softball, and certainly the G-Day game is a huge event. And for the merchants, you know, what I worry about, you know, one of the things that I think makes Athens so special and what I think makes it the best college town, and I've been around a few places, is those local merchants. And, you know, they've really, you know, they're the ones that are really going to get hurt by this. I mean, we talk about the Jacksonville game taking a weekend away, and, you know, the neutral site game seemed to take an opener away. You know, the Clemson game took yet another game away from Athens. This could finish a lot off. You know, you want to go to the Cali and Tito's and the Last Resorts and world famous. I mean, this is what makes Athens special. It's not just the chain restaurants. You just hope those local merchants can find a way with yet another, as you said, punch in the gut.
So Commissioner Greg Sankey spoke yesterday and left at least a little bit of a door ajar that there could be some spring practice at some point in time, and yet acknowledged that the window on that is pretty quickly closing as one academic year eventually kind of rolls in to the next. What did you make of, I guess, the latest update on this? There will be no spring game, but still a chance that some kind of practice could occur, although maybe even the opportunity at that is fleeting at best. I mean, what do you make of where we are on the football timeline at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's one area. You know, Greg Sankey's the guy that got 100 on all of his papers, and on this one he got a 98, because there's just no way that can happen. It's just, you know, spring semester classes are closed down. There's not going to be students on campus, and football players are students. There's an edict from the White House right now that they don't want any gatherings of more than 10 people for at least the next 8 weeks. You know, it doesn't take a mathematician. I suppose on a technicality, there could be some, you know, crazy order of only football players can come on campus for 2 weeks. But then it truly it becomes summer practice. Now, what Sankey said that made more sense later in that call, BA, was, you know, that there could be some sort of preseason to get the players ready for the season. He has no doubt that could happen, though. Does that mean July? Does that mean late June? I mean, that's not spring anymore. That's summer. So I'm not exactly sure. It was curious. It was awkward. It was something that I know the University of Georgia administration also was kind of raised an eyebrow at and said, yeah, this doesn't add up. So I wouldn't try to get anybody's hopes up. I don't think that's going to happen, that we'll have a, you know, spring practice session as we know it. There are players who are practicing together on their own, and that's certainly healthy. And there's a concept that this could happen, you know, later, maybe in the summer, even pre-August, and you wonder how that would happen. But everything's on the table. But right now, not so much on the spring practices.
So I guess here's my response to that. I don't think that you and I are wildly different in our opinions on this. I may just say it in a slightly different way. One of the things I have appreciated about Sankey thus far when he spoke on this, going back to even when the NCAA made a decision that admittedly to me seemed weird at the time to cancel the spring sport national championship, you know, it seemed like it had to be done. You know, Sankey, in response to that on the Feinbaum show, said, we're going to explore all of our options, essentially saying, hey, we're not going to necessarily take no for an answer on some things. If there's a way to make some other stuff happen, we're going to try to do that. Now, that's not going to happen now on the basis of the fact that, you know, school for the most part has been canceled. But I like the idea of the SEC commissioner saying, hey, we're going to continue to explore all opportunities here. It's a weird time, and yet we're going to not, you know, necessarily just, you know, wave the white flag at every moment in terms of what can't be done. And if it comes down to a football situation where, you know, we typically think about that starting in late July, if there's a way to do that earlier, if there's a way to petition and get that done sometime in the summer, assuming that we've all kind of returned to a better health footing at that point in time. I do like the idea that the SEC commissioner is doing what he can to explore all of that.
I do too. You know, and but there's a fine line between exploring and compliance right now. I mean, right now the message needs to be clear. You know, that there needs to be a priority in our society, you know, for the social distancing, you know, and you know, I was a little surprised yesterday at BA that the Oklahoma AD said he hadn't given up on a spring game. I mean, you know, what century are you living in here? You know, this is the guy that we trust to be fair and do what's best for college football on the selection committee every year, but he's still talking about the possibility of a spring game at Oklahoma. I mean, that's just being out of touch and selfish and sending the absolute wrong message. I mean, it can't happen. That's not the mentality that's needed right now for the right kind of compliance, or he might as well go take a trip to the beach in Miami and go crowd it with everyone else. It seems to be ignoring our health data. But I do think there's a fine line, and I'm with you, though. You want a commissioner that speaks in the interest of the schools. You know that the athletic directors are eager to get back to normal. You know the coaches are, the players are. But certainly none of these athletic directors and players that I've spoke to want to do that at a cost or at a risk of spreading a deadly virus.
Let me talk about a happier subject here for a moment. One of the things I got into before you joined us on the show today was the situation with Georgia and its rivals right now. Now, there's a lot from a resume standpoint that UGA as a football program has still got to kind of fill out. You got to win championships, got to do things like that. However, one area in which Georgia is shining at the moment is how it's performing against its rivals, you know, handling Georgia Tech, handling Florida, handling Auburn, handling teams like that. Georgia's doing very well in that regard. But we also, I think, see an example in the SEC of how some of the tectonic plates of rivalries are shifting a bit. And I'm wondering if that same thing is about to happen for Georgia, too. You know, we've always kind of thought of, I would say that most of the people who listen to my show probably agree with me that Florida is Georgia's biggest rival and would probably put Auburn probably second on that list just in terms of the importance of the average Georgia fan. But now Georgia's got a situation moving forward where it's going to be playing Tennessee in November. And Jeremy Pruitt's the Vols coach, a guy that can be a little bit of an agitator from time to time. The Cade Mays transfer is a bit of an example of that. Mike, do you think that maybe in an era in which the Georgia-Tennessee rivalry matters a little bit more because of the guy who's coaching, because of when the game is being played, and because of the fact that, frankly, Georgia's just seemingly handling some of its other rivals with ease right now?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I covered Tennessee, Florida was the number one rival, and Georgia was two, and it had to do with where they fell in the year. And if Tennessee beat Florida earlier in the year, then Georgia became an important game. And, you know, I guess Fulmer had a run of success there in the 90s against Georgia. But, you know, when Mark Richt and David Green and David stepped in, I mean, you know, Tennessee was ready to assume that power spot when Spurrier left. But Georgia got in the way, and Georgia became the rival. I mean, maybe, you know, when Tennessee, you know, beat Florida a couple times there, it was like, okay, now it's Georgia. And I think you bring up a good point about the scheduling and the fact that, you know, Tennessee being another SEC East team, now being a November game, that sets up potentially as a final hurdle. You know, as of now, that game is after the Florida game, right? So you beat Florida, but you may need to get by Tennessee. And I don't think that's the case next season or maybe even the season after. We do know that Tennessee has incredible resources. We know that they're ahead of Georgia facilities-wise, and they're starting to pick up on their recruiting. Again, I don't see Tennessee as an immediate threat. Immediate is in the next two years. But year three, year four, if Pruitt has any staff left, I mean, I think he's only got three guys left off his original staff from 2 years ago. But if that can settle and if Fulmer can get footing there, I would absolutely agree with you that the Tennessee game would become a bigger rivalry than Auburn because it's an East team and because of where it falls on the schedule.
Yeah, and I guess I'm also not necessarily even saying in terms of a threat to Georgia necessarily, but the idea of the game kind of mattering. Now, I'll tell you, Mike, if someone who's gone to Georgia games my entire life and has covered them in recent years, it's been a little bit odd the last couple of years to go to Williams-Brice Stadium last, or I should say 2 years ago, go to Knoxville last year, go to some of these places that I sort of think of as, you know, you can decide for yourself if Georgia-South Carolina is a rivalry. Probably has been in the Gamecocks, maybe has been or hasn't been to some Georgia fans. I guess it depends on if you live in Augusta or not, how much you think of that as a rivalry. But to go to a place like that in 2018 and not have that buzz, that juice of what, you know, Georgia South Carolina had when I was growing up, or to go to Knoxville last year, the big question prior to the game being would be, there'd be enough Georgia fans there to check the board in red and black, Neon Stadium, obviously, in that match, but it's always going to be hard to do. But, you know, I was just kind of wondering if, you know, given the fact that, you know, Georgia currently has a losing streak to South Carolina, even if it's just one game, given the fact that, you know, Tennessee, you know, has at least been an agitator to Georgia enough to have a high-profile transfer, I'm wondering if the feeling of some of these SEC East games isn't about to be, you know, a little more intense again, which in a weird way will kind of make things a bit more fun if all of a sudden a couple of more of these in-division games are circled by Georgia fans. I think that makes the season itself a little bit more enjoyable.
Well, yes and no. Be careful what you wish for. Or, you know, I've covered some people that were steamrolling everybody, and you kind of thought, boy, this is boring. You know, I wonder how many points they're going to win by today. I remember back in the Tennessee golden years, you know, you go into the stadium and thinking, boy, this Notre Dame game, everybody's talking about they're going to beat Notre Dame by 3 touchdowns. You know, this isn't even going to be close. It wasn't even fun. They were just destroying people late 90s. And, you know, Georgia kind of got to that point where they're just blowing everybody up. But you know what? South Carolina served up a pretty healthy reminder last year of, you know, what can happen if you overlook an opponent or if you have a bad day, you know, on offense with your kicking game. You know, it just goes to show you. And plus, the other thing with Georgia is, and you've said this before, it maddeningly, Georgia still seems to have that game every year. You know, that they haven't quite, you know, got to the point where they just, you know, They seem to lay that egg, and you don't understand it, right? I kind of think that's going to change. I feel like the Kirby Smart, you know, now that you've got a full round of Kirby guys, I feel like his staff is his staff. I feel like the personality is going to continue to emerge. You know, the recruiting classes, you have another number one recruiting class landed. I just feel like there's a different tenor, you know, and I feel like this Georgia team is on the verge right now, and they understand. You know, about knocking teams out. I think they get that. So on the one hand, I know what you're saying about wanting some fun, but on the other hand, as somebody that writes those game stories and kind of appreciates the blowouts, so I can have my story done halfway through the fourth quarter. Also for the fans that have heart issues, that they don't like holding their breath until the last minute every game, I would be fine with it being kind of boring myself.
Well, that's certainly a fun thing to look forward to when it takes place. Mike, thanks for being here on this edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. We look forward to reading a lot from you at DogNation.com and, of course, getting a chance to chat with you in some form and fashion here again on our program very soon as well. Thanks, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really good stuff from Mike Griffith. A little bit different kind of recording when you're not in the home studio as opposed to the regular studio, but nonetheless a fun chance for us to get together and talk a little bit. And Mike good enough to share some of his time. And of course, we'll keep bringing you those kinds of interviews here on our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. And you know, it's our goal. Obviously, it's a little frustrating for me personally to be, you know, not in my regular studio, because it's just harder to, you know, to do the show the way that I've become accustomed to when you're in kind of the home studio setup. But luckily, there are some ways to make it as similar as we possibly can. And so good to have the Dog Nation team being able to pitch in and be a part of our show and do all those kinds of things as well. By the way, speaking of great teams, another great team that I want you to know about are my friends at Marlowe's Tavern, because they want you to know that social distancing can still be delicious, too. And obviously, Marlowe's thanks all of you for your service to them, or I should say, allowing them to serve you and, you know, getting out and see a Marlowe's Tavern. You know, this is the time of year where I just love being on Marlowe's patios. I want to be on the Marlowe's patio as much as I can, take advantage of beautiful weather and things like that. And obviously, this is a little bit different time, but there are still ways to support Marlowe's Tavern, and I want to encourage you to do that. You know, Marlowe's got a dedicated team that serves its to-go business. They understand that a lot of you may not feel comfortable dining in the restaurant right now, so you can pick up your favorite food to go and enjoy that in the comfort of your home. I think that's a great alternative and a great way to continue to support our friends at Marlowe's Tavern, which is, you know, during this kind of different, challenging time. They can even deliver it to your car when you arrive at the tavern, if that's what you'd prefer. That's how much they're doing to help take care of you during this time of year. You can find out more about this at marlowestavern.com. Also, Marlowe's Tavern gift cards, one of my favorite things to give to people in my life. Right now, Marlowe's Tavern is making its gift cards even better. They're extending an additional 20% to every gift card you purchase from now through April the 15th. So if you want to purchase one for a friend or just show some kindness to someone right now, a Marlowe's Tavern gift card is a great way to do this. You can find out more about that at info@marlowestavern.com. So make sure that you're following all of that. All right, SEC Through time here. And I told you one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was this kind of, it's like sort of like partially fun and partially irritating thing at ESPN.com. Probably a pretty good premise, but ultimately it's unsatisfying. You know, Chris Lowe, the writer, has put together kind of his field of 64 college football teams. If we had a fictitious tournament for the 2020 teams, you know, how it all play out. Georgia started off as a 3 seed. It advanced a little bit. Let me give you a couple of the other things here, and then we'll kind of get to the Georgia part of this. East Regional Semifinals, Clemson beat Michigan 38-24. A&M, a nice showing, beating Baylor. A&M was a 2 seed, by the way. They beat Baylor in the fictional tournament. And then A&M loses to Clemson. Then you got Ohio State beating Auburn. Florida beating Texas. How about that? So regional final sees Ohio State beat Florida in ESPN's fictional college football tournament. Then you got the Georgia, if you're curious, beats Miami in the regional final, beats USC in the regional final, then beats Penn State in the college football playoff, you know, the Final Four. Ultimately, it loses the national championship game to Justin Fields and Ohio State. I'll read you the write-up here on this. Let me give you let me give you the one on Georgia and Penn State. So this is a 3-seed Georgia, according to ESPN, beating a 2-seed Penn State, 27-20. Chris Lowe says that Kirby Smart knew the stakes when he took the Georgia head coaching job in 2016. The Dogs want championships, Lowe writes, national championships to be precise. The combination of Jamie Newman's multidimensional ability at quarterback and a defense that's downright salty sends the Dogs right back to where they were in 2017, playing for a national championship. But ultimately, he's got Ohio State beating Georgia in that scenario, 35-31. Lowe writes that in the new age of quarterback free agency in college football, you just knew we were going to get one of these matchups. Both teams have transfer quarterbacks who had monster seasons, but one of those quarterbacks has a little extra motivation. Fields takes a pounding early from his Georgia team, former Georgia teammates, but keeps getting back up off the turf to lead the Buckeyes in a winning drive. They will be talking about the Ohio State University for some time to come. So there you have it. Georgia and a fictional 2020 Field of 64 college football tournament makes it all the way to the national championship game, only to lose to Ohio State. So in this kind of tumultuous time where all of us are practicing or trying to practice social distancing and trying to not fray our nerves too much by all the coronavirus talk, the one thing we don't need right now is throwing another log on the fire of Justin Fields' time at Georgia, what may or may not have happened there, but ESPN ultimately kind of does that in that situation. I guess if you want to take anything serious from this at all, I guess your takeaway on this is that even in the midst of all the change for Georgia, you know, new quarterback, new offensive coordinator, new this, new that, even in the midst of all of that, Georgia is still very much a national championship contender moving forward. And even though Georgia only starts off as a 3 seed in this tournament, that was pretty much on the basis of where Georgia ranked in the preseason FPI. I think Georgia was 10th in ESPN's preseason FPI. This is still not a team that for any legitimate reason should be expected to take a huge step back. Now, ultimately, you know, it's always Georgia fans themselves that are the most impatient about this. I think that's one of the huge misnomers that are out there, where the average non-Georgia fan thinks that Georgia fans are delusional about what Georgia has or hasn't accomplished. The truth is, it's the exact opposite. Georgia fans themselves have grown experts in how long it's been since the team got over the hump. And as Lowe, I think, accurately writes up, even if the game itself was fictional, the breakdown of the game was still, I think, very accurate, that Kirby Smart knew what he was signing up for when he took the Georgia job. He knew what he was getting himself into, coming to a place where only national championships were going to be shown as a sign of success. So being back just playing for a national championship again, even though that'd mean 2 playoff appearances in 3 years for most programs, that'd be about as good as you could ever hope to do. For Georgia, that's probably not quite good enough. And the kind of thing that Georgia fans are going to be expecting a whole lot more from. So it's a good news, bad news situation. The good news here is that Georgia very much is in the mix for national championships here in 2020 and really beyond. I said this on the video version of Dog Nation Daily this week, that I don't expect the championship window for Smart at Georgia to close anytime soon. And it's as wide open in 2020 as it was before the start of the season in 2019. However, it's also fair to say that once again, Georgia finds itself among the top contenders, but not the top contender on paper before the season begins. Georgia will be a point spread underdog in Tuscaloosa in September. As much as I expect Georgia to win that game, it's important to note that experts who put their money where their mouth is and who crunch the numbers and things like that certainly don't see Georgia as the more likely team to win. And teams like Ohio State, who Chris Lowe has winning this fictional tournament, and Clemson, who, you know, has played for a national championship and claimed a national championship in the season prior to that, and then winning prior to that in 2016, you know, that's a team that'll have better odds than Georgia win the national championship. It's probably never been harder to win a title than it is right now. The good news is, on the small list of teams who are capable of doing that, Georgia is one of them. But it's probably never been harder than it is right now. And that's just the burden that a Georgia fan has to bear as he or she prepares to see their team here in this upcoming season. Also, I guess as a way of kind of wrapping this up and getting ready to wrap up our SEC through, also interesting to see from Lowe, Auburn doing well in this tournament, Texas A&M doing well in this tournament, Florida doing well in this tournament. So if you want to kind of take a fake thing and turn it into a real angle, you know, this is a year, once again, in which the SEC is expected to be pretty deep and maybe a little bit more balanced depth than before, right? You know, if you do have true, you know, legit top 10 teams in the East again for a second year in a row, and if Texas A&M really is ready to kind of join LSU and Alabama as the top of the SEC West, and if Auburn is still a contender there as well, all of a sudden this looks a little different than some leagues do, where a lot of the talent, like say in a deep conference like the Big Ten, it's all kind of sort of constituted in one division, the Big Ten East. And in some cases, you've got Clemson and nobody else in the ACC. You've had a version of that in the Big 12 as well in previous years with Oklahoma. It looks like what the SEC is kind of setting itself for in the upcoming season is a little more balance all the way around, which I think is a nice testament to the overall strength of the SEC. And frankly, I think it makes for a league that's a lot more fun to watch as well. Let me also tell you about my friends at Kroger here for a moment. Don't forget that Kroger's got new hours as of right now. The stores are opening at 8 a.m. That's in order to get the stores, you know, clean and get the shelves restocked. This is obviously a trying time, challenging time for a lot of folks, you know, visiting supermarkets more than they're maybe used to doing so between the week. And Kroger's trying to do what it can to help you in that regard. That means getting the store ready to go early, you know, early for you to be open at 8 a.m., then closing up at 9 p.m. Of course, fuel centers right now, 5 a.m. to 9 p.m., so you can stop in and get some fuel on that. Huge thanks to all the folks at Kroger. And, you know, their service has been amazing thus far. So huge thanks to them for continuing to serve with a smile, you know, after working what have been very long hours and kind of a challenging time. Kroger's really coming through and passing that test with flying colors. So huge thanks to them for just really doing everything they can to help make sure that we keep food in our refrigerator. We could not do that without our friends at Kroger. So big shout out from us here on Dog Nation Daily. Also, big thanks to our sponsor, Meriwether and Tharp, as well, for making Dog Nation Daily possible today. Your source for Georgia divorce. You can find them online at all. At theatlantadivorceteam.com. And for those of you that are normally video viewers to the show and you're maybe checking out the podcast this week because it's a little bit more like the broadcast that you've become accustomed to, well, we appreciate you being a part of what we're doing here. I'll also remind you that our Gator Hater Updater now stands at 1,237 days. That's really good news. Thanks for being here. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, and we will see you back here again tomorrow.